The Frost Over Flowers by Danger Sox. Read by Ellie Camille. Summary. Carlos is not invited to tea, and there will be consequences for attending. This work was inspired by Butterfly Weed, by Maiden of the Moon. It troubles me that you are here. Carlos remembers leaning back and being mildly, but no less pleasantly, surprised to feel a chair back supporting him. It is cool and soft and gentle like the earth, gentle like the steady voice that continues by cooing, "You bricky boy, you certainly are not up to Dick." If he shuts his eyes for one more moment, Carlos believes he could rest them for a very long time. But the familiar voice revives him enough to peek with one eye, strange, to the speaker, and he finds Cecil gazing at him with luminous eyes. "Not up to Dick at all," murmurs Carlos's host, with sympathy and something more that Carlos cannot pin. "But, nevertheless, welcome back." Carlos frowns, because he is up to Dick. He feels fine, if just a little weary. And he is frozen before protesting, because he has never left, so he should not be welcomed back. He has been here before, because he recognizes the table between them, with the china, and the glass vase with flowers, and the fanciful card face down before him. The gazebo, and the world of white, and the floating devil cards, like a wall around them, and Cecil, sitting poised, and wise, and ready to speak so many things. The scientist, grateful for the chair and the company, cocks his head and looks fondly at the flower vase, because he remembers that. The changing display intrigues him in remembered dreams and invites the butterflies that may crowd his lover's face. There is a single rose, too red to be red, standing solitary in the glass, and if Carlos glances away and starts a conversation and sneaks a glance back, he knows that he will find a different floral array. Slyly, he turns to study the tablecloth and finds it frayed and old, dirty with stains, and a consistency like burlap. Strange, for it had once been beautiful beneath the painted Wedgwood tea set. The saucers and cups are chipped bone now, not at all suitable for sharing or entertaining. Carlos starts to understand the hesitation in Cecil's welcome. It is probably shame at the display, though Carlos does not come here for the fancy. Too much butter on the bacon is an annoyance for the scientist, and Carlos knows that Cecil knows this. He steals his attention back to the rose and finds it still there, though deeper in shade now. Only slightly, and only apparent, because Carlos had been observing. He is disappointed by the result, and surprised by the feeling. His neck itches, and Carlos represses the urge to scratch at his throat. Cecil makes a sound, like a sigh and a tut. Carlos pulls his head up with effort and observes Cecil, looking slightly out of twig. The brooch is not one Carlos has ever observed on his partner, but it is one of the first things he had noticed the first time they've met. Not that they have ever left the gazebo. They have always been here, sharing tea and secrets. And yet the cream-smooth skin of the other is paling as frost creeps from the shadows of his jaw. There will be no butterfly tracks, having ever tickled the pores and lines of this one's face. "You look different," Carlos tries, or perhaps it is his delayed. "We never left." It could have been many things that he says in reply, and the colorless eyes that regard him will not lessen in their pity and disappointment and admiration. He is having trouble communicating. Carlos remembers Cecil once saying, "The combination of guttural sounds, the grotesque contortions of the body, even something as ephemeral as a single flower blossom, can convey so much, my friend." The vase is still a lonely rose. It is wilting. Carlos doesn't know what that means. "I've been here before," Carlos repeats, as if reminding the vase to change. He cannot explain it, but a magician, unlike a scientist, can accept some things as they are without reasonable understanding, and the single card is on the table, face down. Cecil interrupts the thought, his voice untouched by the unsettling transformation of the world around them. It is a watery balm of warmth and control. Carlos finds himself drawn to it, greedy. "And what do you remember from before, "We never left." Cecil shakes his head gracefully. His cheek glitters with the kiss of crystal reflecting the weak light, and Carlos vacantly remembers how moisture freezes and crawls and creeps across glass and blades of grasses and apparently skin. Beautiful and cold, killing small living things with a cruel kindness that puts life to sleep. He's tired. "You left," counters the host, who reaches over with long fingers to delicately rearrange the bone pottery. The new arrangement casts a faint shadow on the lone card on the table. "I'm sorry," Carlos breathes, not sure if the statement Cecil has made is an accusation. Carlos never means to leave Cecil. He's starting to wonder if having done so counts as a betrayal. Betrayals, betrayals. I think I remember needing a hospital. Teeth, sharp and white as fresh snow, flash as Cecil brandishes them. "Very good," he encourages. "I had a concussion, weird dreams, tea and butterflies and floating cards and changing flowers, Cecils who are not Cecil, something dark and promising. These visits happen in threes. There were three cards, and Carlos and Cecil had overturned them together. One card does not belong here. The rose is still possessing the vase, drying in sickness. Its tips are starting to blacken. You did have a concussion, to which I am very sorry if you attributed it to your dreams. And you copped a mouse, too, Cecil adds. Remember? And Carlos shakes his head because he had been winded. The doctor suspected a cracked rib. A bump on his head, the benefactor of his accident, had tried to repress showing an interest in tousling and feeling it through his hair. But no black eye, Carlos remembers. No black eye and no rope and nothing impaling him. He sees Cecil across from him with a raised brow, and when Carlos tries to copy the gesture, he remembers that he can only see with one eye. Think, coaxes the other as he leans forward. Before you fell into your chair, Carlos. The encouragement is full of faith, and Carlos recalls just how much Cecil regards Carlos's intelligence. Sometimes, though, Carlos is certain he doesn't always deserve the respect. He tries to think back to before the table here, and yet after the table then. Something has changed, and a good scientist understands how to identify a catalyst when it is before him. He tries to skip his mind across the surface of events like a flat stone on a placid lake of his memory, but instead his recollection flies like a boulder crashing into a tumultuous sea, sinking deep and fast and learning nothing. Carlos breathes shallowly, feeling the weight of that rock like a hole in his chest. He shifts, uncomfortable in his seat now. He wants to close his eyes. Cecil does not look disappointed. Thankfully, Cecil does not judge Carlos in this confusion. Carlos realizes that Cecil has never judged him. He flounders, grasping selfishly at the warmth that the realization brings him in this cold place. The rose on the table has been dead for a long time. Carlos cannot look at it, and he turns to stare at the white expanse beyond their humble shelter. There is a cloudy darkness creeping at the corners of the white void. The darkness lingers at the peripherals and moves with Carlos's eyes. Mortality, hums the Marquis softly. Are you dying? Carlos asks, suddenly giving name to the fearfulness groping inside of him. It festers like a wound, but the scientist's heart. It explains the rose, all by itself in such a large vase. Is that why I'm still here? Am I? Murmurs Cecil, at a loss for expression for once. Dear boy, dear Carlos, you worry for me? They meet eyes, a petal slips free in the silence, too weak to hold up against gravity. It falls from the vase onto the soiled and rough tablecloth. The water in the bottom of the crystal is murky, and without looking, Carlos knows the same liquid sits in his untouched teacup. This is a poor excuse for tea time, but if Cecil is here, if they are together... We aren't together, are we? Carlos asks, numb. He shivers and places his cold fingers on the table. If he doesn't hold his hands there, they will creep up to scratch at his throat and loosen his collar. They will slide down and part the buttons covering his torso. He will learn something. Why a black rose? Perhaps he has failed. Maybe in freeing Cecil. This Cecil. Or perhaps he is not supposed to free this Cecil, revealing him instead to the other Cecil. Carlos's Cecil. But the scientist, or the magician, has lost a chance to say and do more. Suddenly, there is no time left. The white world is darkening. The stains in the tablecloth are old blood, and the person before Carlos is dying. Roses, black roses for the dead. A single black rose for one who is. Carlos reaches over to flip the card, and immediately, unexpectedly, Cecil is behind Carlos's chair and reaching over him to slap a hand down. It holds Carlos's fingers as they grasp the tarot card's corner, and Cecil's touch is like ice. Must you always look? Despairs the stranger and the lover behind Carlos. There are some questions you don't always have to ask. Carlos longs to inquire, to push an explanation. Why the sudden concern, or how can Cecil's hands be so cold when Carlos has known them to be so warm? Where are they, and why, and how, and what is the card that is so terrible to turn? There are no other cards spinning playfully across the table in lifelike kaleidoscopes. There are no black petals dusting the surface of this card. But soon, if Carlos pulls, he knows Cecil won't stop him from revealing the secret face. He considers it. Of course, whispers the voice. Of course you must look. You cannot help yourself. I know you. I know better. The hurt there. The truth. The lament and the love from Cecil is recognized, but perhaps they really are not together. Carlos hears the emotions, and he cannot feel them as being enough to stop him. He'd shake if he could. He's helpless, and... Then before, please, first. Cecil continues, whispering into the shell of Carlos's ear. It is a breath that has no heat. First, let me tell you a story. Carlos swallows. It's hard to. He nods. It hurts. He worries for Cecil. He loves to hear stories from that voice, and perhaps he doesn't say that enough. Never will. Immune to these concerns, Cecil seems to grin triumphantly against Carlos's ear. And then he begins. This is a story about a clearing. It is in a black forest with a circle of trees around it. It is more like a meadow, and so very important. The nomads who discovered it, thousands and thousands of years back, recognized the unnaturally perfect circumference of the tree line. The pines there seemed to whisper in tongues older than theirs. Their branches wound up to point at secret constellations during particularly auspicious moments. That tribe camped near the meadow, but never in it. It does not matter if the evil in the clearing came about from the bloodshed the tribe brought to it in one night of frantic confusion and horror, blood that soaked into the earth and fed the trees, the women and children and innocent brave men. Perhaps the evil had existed long before and is to blame for the eradication of every gathering of humanity that somehow became drawn to it. The important thing is that the meadow is there and continues to exist, and today has a tiny village next to it. And the village survives the clearing and entertains guests sometimes. It appears perfect and quaint, with facilities like an inn and a barber shop. Oh, but you know this already, Carlos. We've deviated from the clearing in the story with its perfect circle of whispering pines. Tonight it has a circle of another kind in its center, made with chalk and red ochre. It is a complicated circle, with rare stones at its cardinal points. It does not care that there is a frost dusting its design. It is that time of day where the dusk makes the sky the same color as the earth, a lavender that you secretly associate to me. But the black trees are so very black, Carlos. The meadow is so very important, and in the center of the circle is a man who lies on the ground unmoving, barely breathing, with a ring of red around his neck and a black eye and a blade. Carlos finishes. A blade once in his chest. The hand pressing down on his gives a squeeze. It may be meant as reassuring. What do you remember, Carlos? Carlos shakes his head, barely moving and feeling the lips of Cecil just under his ear. Along his jaw, once considered strong and perfect, the scientist is distracted by a memory. So much blood. Think, presses Cecil. It is very important that you know why you want to flip that card. You put the card before me, Carlos counters, eyes fixed upon it. not upon his lapel or the rose. He cannot look at the rose any more. I did no such thing, denies the voice. You know who put the card there. Carlos does, but you beautiful, perfect, and kind optimist. Cecil praises. Ghost breath down Carlos's neck, which burns, itches. So easy to trap, so simple to fool. No, he... Stop defending him, chastises Cecil. His voice turns, twisting like a knife, but not directed at Carlos. He betrayed you. No, he... Telly's a friend of the family. He's known me for years. You remember, Cecil goads. The village, the inn. I was invited there. They knew about our work. And you left without me. Not quite an accusation. You had your duties. You were going to join me. Did you? I'm on the road, Cecil confirms. We aren't together. I can't help you, Carlos. Telly wouldn't. Power is a strange thing. It makes people do all sorts of evils. You should have seen this coming, my love. I am in the circle, Carlos acknowledges. I'm the one who is not moving. And there are hooded figures, and they surround the circle, and Telly is one of them. Yes, Carlos, I am so sorry. Carlos nods. The frost makes sense now. He had thrown on his coat as the winter sun slipped away. As Telly stood on his doorstep, eyes damp and face crushed, and Carlos knew something had been amiss. He had been too generous to suspect Telly, too cowardly to accuse his host. Would he care for a lost gypsy child? Asks Cecil, following the thought of the dying scientist as if they were open and apparent to everyone. I would care, Carlos murmurs. You would. But they are not like you, nor me, Carlos. He was crying. Telly was crying. And why was that wrong? For a child. It was cold out. We knew about the evil in the forest. I was brought out to investigate it. You were coming later that day, and we'd investigate. But the missing girl... And there was no time left. I was followed. I was going to wait for you, but there was Telly crying over a child. And what was wrong about the crying? Cecil repeats. Patient. Kind. Distant. Cruel. It wasn't sincere. Sincere. And what do you know about sincerity, Carlos? Carlos feels the pull. Turns his stare away from their hands and the card. The card he must not flip. He stares up and sees Cecil. Not his Cecil, but Cecil. And the colorless eyes are shining, and there are frost-bitten trails of tears, and a glistening nose, and a genuinity that threatens to swallow the scientist. when you cry, Carlos confesses. It's strange. I don't think I've ever seen it, but it happens. You hide it. And I know. But you don't know that I know. I'll be crying soon, love. I'll be a livid mess. They know I'm coming. They'll set me up. The wry words, consigned to accept the story, consigned to let Carlos overturn the mystery under his fingertips, prepared to cry and cry and lose and freeze. Why are they doing this? What will they summon? You have a lot of enemies, and myself too. We meddle in Skillamalink affairs. It doesn't matter what they summon, Carlos, dear. You were trapped by kindness, and I will be destroyed with you. We have no more time. Carlos closes his eyes, and he wills the black rose gone. He wills for Cecil to be warm and close, and not somewhere on a road, oblivious to what is coming. Not here, trapped under missing butterflies. He wills for a miracle, and when he looks, it is at their hands. His host releases him, and the absence of icy fingers is not noticed. They were never touching. There is no one in the gazebo with Carlos. There is nothing on the table but the card held unturned by Carlos's fingers. There is no fear. There is nothing. The scientist drops the card, pushing it away. The magician opens his eyes, one swollen shut. He is on the ground, curled in on his side, and the pain is unbelievable. Blood coating his mouth and seeping from his chest in cold exposure. His lungs burn, his throat. Carlos remembers the rope from behind, jerking him back and leaving him helpless and confused and overwhelmed. He shouldn't have let the perfect circumference of the meadow distract him upon entering it. He should have taken the time to notice the details of the prepared chalk and the ochre circle in its center. Carlos should have especially questioned why a lost child would come to such an auspicious place, or how Telly had known to come this way. Sprawled, weak, he can only see the spellwork from the level of the ground that he'd been reduced to. It gives him no data. The chants are quite loud. Some of the voices are familiar. They had been kind and welcoming to him earlier. Now, they enthusiastically and maniacally promise murder. Dizzy, determined, Carlos pushes his numb fingers into the cold soil and tries to prop himself up. He sputters, breath too short to help him. The world teeters sideways. There is a crushed black rose under him. There is a frost soaking up his life, and far too many strangers in hoods to overwhelm, even if he should somehow get to his feet and leave the circle. They don't care that he is fighting to pull his knees under him. They don't care that he no longer motionless. Carlos tries to think of a counter chant to disrupt their summoning, but his memory betrays him. He stares at the summoners, some he's known for years, and believes that beyond their shadowed hoods will be no more traces of humanity, no remorse. He can't beat them. He can't stop them. He can't reason with them. They will win. And they will win if they notice the small pair of child's eyes peering from the wall of trees behind them. The missing gypsy child has never been missing. A flash of teeth, much like a memory of fresh snow, smiles over tea, flashes at Carlos from the shadow of the worlds. A miracle? And Carlos, bloody and teetering, smiles back before he loses consciousness again, his mind falling on the image of a brightly colored butterfly erupting dangerously and deadly from the darkness before he crushes again an impossible black rose under his dead weight. Somewhere, Carlos is saddened when he does not fall into a chair at a table. He recalls someone lifting him in a bear hug. There is hooting and screams. There are strange words and a familiar weeping. There are butterflies. There are so many butterflies. And if he shoos them away, Carlos will find flowers. Not simply black roses, but begonia in bindweed, coltsfoot, so much coltsfoot, lemon-scented geranium, and glycine with jasmine and milkvetch. The butterflies swarm, hiding mulberry, and mulberry hides helenium. Carlos realizes then that the meadow is important because it is helenium that grows, dominates, and thrives there in the spring. And with this on his mind, Carlos eventually wakes, hot and aching to find a Cecil at his bedside, sincerely sniffling, with a handkerchief destroyed in a clenched and trembling fist. It is hardly a dignified look for a marquis, but to Carlos, it is bang up to the elephant. It is the only sight he wants to see. "Eh," he croaks, reaching over and finding it hard to close the distance. Cecil completes the action, though. The other practically collapses over the bed and entwines himself around the offered arm and chokes and coos. "You're awake. Oh, thank you, thank heavens." "Where?" "We're in a gypsy camp." "I'm sorry. I had to give them all of the books you brought with you, but they saved you, and I can replace those books. And why didn't you wait for me? I was on time for once, and..." Carlos squeezes the hand and finds himself stuck with too many words and no way to say them. "I'm sorry," may have come out as, "the meadow." Cecil's face falls, only slightly, and only apparent, because Carlos had been observing. He is disappointed in himself and in his stupidity instantly. The meadow can wait. It is important that they are together. "I don't think the circle worked, though some man dressed as a New World Indian said he had used his magic to counter it. He's not even from here, so take that for what it's worth. If you need to go back and, well, we can double check, but I'd rather you recover fully. You've had a fever, and you kept talking to me. except, well, not to me. Carlos frowns, soaking in the confusion and frustration in his lover's tone. He can do better. He needs to do better. Carlos clears his throat, feeling the rough ache from where it had been strangled. I'm sorry, Cecil. I am so sorry. No, Carlos. The scientist interrupts the dismissal. I am so sorry I didn't wait for you. And I'm sorry for everything I've done to make you cry. And I'm sorry for when I've talked to you, but not to you. It is a goodbye. It is a farewell to a place that Carlos knows he will return to only once more at the end of all things. At the end of Cecil and the start of something else. Something terrible. He's been warned, preserved, for that future meeting. Even now, the memory of the table and the flowers and the Cecil with the jewel at his throat, the voice, is fading, slipping away and hard to concentrate on. Cecil's lip trembles, and maybe he understands, but maybe he doesn't. The Marquis sniffles and crawls gingerly onto the tiny wood bed with the beautiful colors, and Carlos wraps an arm weakly around him and closes his eyes. Outside, the temperature drops, and a frost forms on a strange black rose as it lays defiant and abandoned in an important meadow. A barber, escaping death from a vindictive Indian, not that he is really an Indian, slowly goes mad in the wilderness. A child is not missing, but she is in the next room and has gained a library. And finally, a card sits on a table unturned, waiting for one last encounter with a magician. Good night, Cecil whispers into the bandaged chest of his scientist. Good night, Carlos answers to the last voice he wants to hear. Good night.